Okay.
Okay, thank you so much.
No worries, you have a wonderful rest of your day, okay?
Thank you, bye.
Okay, well, apparently I'm in. Yeah, I'm in.
So is the meeting on?
Hey, good afternoon, everybody.
Apparently.
Somebody is in. We hear you. You're with us.
Yeah.
So there we go. Good job. Thanks, Tracy. All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to an afternoon DAM meeting. We usually like to do our DAM meetings in the morning, but this is a special edition. So we have you here today to talk about yet another exciting COVID change. So as you all know, Senate Bill 95 was passed on March 29th. There was some discussion after that point as to which parts, if any, actually applied to the county. And the exciting news is that it all does. And like any good legislation, it includes a bunch of retrospective pieces to make your life that much more fun and exciting. So we know everyone has a lot of questions and that there's a lot of nuanced things here and there's a lot of moving pieces as to what you're supposed to do. I'm going to give as our disclaimer for our group here today before we get started that these things are also new to us. We have been seeking legal guidance on what we are to do in which instances, and even within that realm, there has been some disagreement and some confusion as to how and when these things are supposed to be applied. So I only start by saying today is an opportunity for us to start the conversation, to do the best that we can to answer the questions that we've already received and that you might have today. And then to remind you that a week from today, we have our usually scheduled DAM meeting that's in the morning, and we are going to again devote that meeting to this topic so that once you've tried this on a couple cases and if you run into questions or issues, we can circle back in a week and try to support you on that. But just, you know, as I said, want to make the caution that these are very fluid, ever-changing times, and we're doing the best we can to get you the most accurate and up-to-the-minute guidance. But like all things COVID, anticipate that there may be some changes. So along those lines, our theme for our group today is all things retro, because everything old is new again. where you once had paid entitlements for time away due to COVID, as you did in 2020 through FFCRA, now we have Senate Bill 95, which is giving entitlements for pay that are things COVID related under Senate Bill 95, and what we are calling SPSL. So it's the state's paid sick leave related to COVID. So how we're gonna go about today is, you know, as usual, we have with us here our CEO benefits team. So Ken Mizuno, Courtney Bishop, Tracy Sewell are all here. Then from CEO Risk Management DMD division, we have Jess Alanez and myself. We got some submitted questions, which we thought we would start with those questions because we think they probably represent questions that a lot of you have, give the answers to those, and then try to roll into, okay, what does that look like in VCHRP and what does it look like in Presagia from an application standpoint? So going to turn it over to Tracy. She's going to kick us off with the questions. As always, super informal format. We're here to support you. Please feel free to put your questions in the chat. Put your hand up, unmute yourself, speak to the group, however it's most comfortable for you, but trying to make sure everybody is hearing and understanding the information in the same way. And before I turn it to Tracy, I will just remind everyone, we are recording these sessions. So you are currently now being recorded if you choose to stay. And as always, we will put the resource guides that we have put together for today, along with the recording of the meeting, will be on the intranet site. And because this is COVID specific, it will be on the link that relates to all things COVID. So with all of that as our groundwork for today, I'm gonna turn it over to Tracy, who's gonna go through the questions to get us started.
All right, thank you, Catherine. All right, we're gonna jump right into these questions. And as Catherine said, if you have any questions as we're going along, you can either unmute yourself or put it in the chat. All right, so question number one, since natural disaster pay and supplemental paid sick leave run concurrently, is it only NDP that was used from 1/1/21 to current that offsets the SPSL? The answer is yes, that is correct. So if an employee has used their 40 hours of NDP, if they used that prior to January 1st, it does not count toward the 80 hour SPSL entitlement. If they use the NDP from January 1st forward, those hours do count toward the 80 hour SPSL entitlement. All right, question number two, for any new leave, should we code it as NDP if they have not exhausted part or all of the 40 hours approved by the Board of Supervisors last April, or should we use the SPSL code for all? We are recommending that any portion of NDP that exists and is used from January 1st forward be coded as SPSL. This will make it give us the ability to track the SPSL better. So we'll move on to number three. Would employees have to complete the California Supplemental Sick Leave Pay and Disaster Attestation Form? Yes, the forms need to be completed for tracking purposes.
So Tracy, we have a question before you go on. The question is SPSL the payroll code that is also being used?
No, it's not, and we'll get to that in a second. All right, so let's see, number four. Can employees use either of the forms if they have not used the natural disaster attestation pay yet? If an employee has natural disaster hours left and the reason for the leave meets the SPSL criteria, the employee should only complete the SPSL request form. And that form can be found on our COVID-19 resources website. The link is here. Does remaining home due to an underlying health condition qualify? What we did here was just repost what the law says. So if an employee has an underlying health condition and they meet one of these, yes, then they would qualify. If they have an underlying health condition and they don't meet one of these eligibility rules, then they would not. So just make sure that they fall into one of these. So let's say under caring for yourself, it does say if you've been advised by a healthcare provider to quarantine. So if they have an underlying health condition and the health provider says to quarantine, yes, they would qualify. But if they don't have that advisement to quarantine, then no, they would not. Hope that makes sense. And then this question six is similar. It says, does caring for a family member remaining home due to an underlying health condition qualify? And we would just say refer to answer number five.
So Tracy, a couple more quick questions. So first is, if NDISH has been used since 1/1/21, must we go back to change it somehow?
No. When we're querying to see if SPSL has been used, we'll also be querying for the NDISH and NDIS time reporting codes.
Okay.
So no need to go back and change those.
And then Rebecca Wilhite has a question about the NDP form versus the SPSL. So maybe I don't know if you can unmute her, or she can unmute herself.
Yep.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have some employees that make more than $511 per shift. And so if we only were to process the supplemental paid sick leave, it's going to max them out. So kind of what we, at least in concept, what I'm thinking, and I don't know how many other agencies have to worry about workers' comp and 4850 claims. But what happens is it's a kind of a crazy complicated algorithm, because if they haven't used their natural disaster pay, then what we would do is we would take the greater benefit first. So we would take 40 hours of natural disaster pay and pay them the full amount. which would run current with SPSL. And then the second 40 hours we would pay with the SPSL with the maximum benefit of 511. And for anybody that earns more than 511 per shift, then that is the portion of what they could potentially be eligible for workers' compensation under 4850. And so what's causing us to do is HR has to stop what they're doing, payroll has to stop what they're doing, so that we can coordinate, well, what kind of leave is it before they can, and then workers' comp, as you know, has very specific timelines to get back to the employee with what their benefit amount is. And I can tell you, we're not quick enough with running the numbers. We can take this offline if that was, I know it was a big mouthful of a question.
So Tracy, you wanna go on any of that or you want me to?
You can, but we are going to somewhat address your question, Becky, in a little bit, right, Catherine? So maybe we hold off until that piece.
Yes, we're going to talk a little bit about the work comp. You may have some nuanced things there for those of you who have sworn safety members, but yes, hopefully that it'll help a little bit. I guess the one thing I would just say in all of this is a reminder as we go through this, because I have to keep reminding myself, is for the retrospective, no matter what the person received, they have to come to you and say, I want the SPSL. So if you already paid them 4850 or they took sick time or they took whatever time they took, they have to come to you and ask you to change something that's already been paid before you have to do any of this. So there may be, I think in a lot of those instances, folks who've already been paid, especially if it happened to come through work comp, who are not necessarily going to be inclined to say, I want you to now change this to SPSL. So we'll kind of have to go through those pieces case by case, but at least that gives you just the reminder, they must affirmatively ask you to change what was already given.
Okay, so then my only remaining question is in light of all that, Tracy, is it acceptable? Is it proper for us to continue what we're doing, which is for current and future claims, hypothetically, if somebody takes 80 hours, shouldn't we run the SPSL and the attestation pay, you know, concurrently, but give them the benefit of the natural disaster pay and require that form and pay them at that rate, and then the second 80 under that SPSL?
Yes, I agree. In that case, that's how it should be done. I think that's the perfect solution. It's giving the employee the maximum benefit allowed. So yes, I agree that that's how it should be done, Becky.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, good. So at least we got the easy ones out of the way first. next question is, on question four, I thought if the reason for the leave meets the criteria for both NPD and SPSL, why would we be using the SPSL code? I thought we would need them to use their natural disaster pay first, since we want them to run concurrently.
So the reason that we're using the SPSL, whatever those time recording codes are when they come out, is because, and we'll get to this in a minute, we have to have a separate leave bank that shows all the hours available to the employee. And this is currently being configured and tested, and it's a huge project. So it's going to be an absolute miracle to get it out by next pay period, but that's our goal. So we would need any hours that would even qualify for SPSL should be reported as such, so that that bank gets reduced and the employee sees how many SPSL hours they have left. So that's why we're saying if the reason they're out qualifies for SPSL, that should at least the form should trump the natural disaster pay. Now, in the situation that Becky brought up where the employee makes more than the max, I can see why you would want to do the natural disaster first and the SPSL second. It's absolutely, like Catherine said, it's absolutely going to be on a case by case basis. We're just giving you guidelines for majority, I guess. And definitely you might need to pivot case by case. Hopefully that answered the question.
It looks like maybe Alicia has one other follow-up question. If you could, I don't know if you're controlling the meeting or they are.
Hi, can you hear me? Yes. Great. Thank you so much. Yes, very, very helpful. Thank you. Just to clarify. So what I guess I'm thinking of is those employees who want to use the SPSL first, they'll have 80 hours. If they don't use their natural disaster, those who haven't used the natural disaster pay, they'll maybe use SPSL first and then plus 40 hours. So they'll get 120 hours total, which I don't want to happen. Is there a way to use their NDP first and, I don't know, have them still fill out the SPSL, or do we really give them 120 hours?
No, so they're gonna run concurrent whether they fill out the form or not. So if we get an SPSL form for 80 hours and they have 40 hours of NDP left, we're going to count 40 of those hours towards NDP whether they fill out the form or not. And that's why we're saying just complete the one form, because we're going to be querying all three codes, or however many codes there are, all the SPSL codes, all the natural disaster codes from 1/1/21 forward, those are going to count toward their SPSL entitlement.
Oh, okay. So we as an agency would still need to track that. So anytime somebody submits an SPSL form, we would still need to go back and verify, okay, do they have, you know, their any natural disaster pay left, subtract that from their bank that I guess we've been keeping track of this entire time, and then also subtract it from the SPSL. So no matter what, those will run concurrently, no matter what form they sign.
Correct. Yes.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And I think so. Carla also asked, I think, essentially the exact same question. So she was saying, you know, theoretically, does it mean they have 120 hours? And again, it does not. You get 80 total. It's just whether it's 80 straight SPSL or 80 combination SPSL and natural disaster pay.
Yes, thank you. All right, so we will move on to number 7. How does an employee request a retro adjustment and what code do we use? So the law does state that an employee needs to submit the request, just like Catherine was saying, they need to come to you and say, hey, I want to take advantage of this SPSL. Once they do that, they can complete that SPSL request form, and that's on our website. That form is used both for retro requests and for prospective requests. And the time reporting codes, as we mentioned, will be available soon. Like I said, the system's currently being configured and tested, and then those codes will be able to be used and subtract from the entitlement that the employee is entitled to.
I got another question, Tracy. Would the employee complete the SPSL form if they are requesting a retro adjustment for time taken prior to 1/1/21, or would they complete the natural disaster attestation form if they have hours available?
So no, retro adjustments, they're only going to go back to 1/1. So SPSL is effective January 1st. So we shouldn't be doing any SPSL adjustments prior to that. It's only 1/1 forward. Yeah. Hopefully that answered that question. Let's see, where was I? Number 8, for a retro request, since employees have already been paid, we return their sick hours to their bank, but we do not put another line on the time card to indicate SPSL. We just track it separately. Is this correct? Since the employee was already paid for the time off, you would request an adjustment to have the regular sick hours put back into the bank. However, you would also request an SPSL adjustment using the codes that are going to be provided for the hours they used, so that their SPSL bank will have the hours subtracted. So there'll be two things. You're going to be putting ours back into whatever bank they used. It could be sick, but it could also be vacation or annually, whatever. You're going to put those hours back, and then you're going to have to subtract them from the SPSL bank when that's in the system, hopefully next pay period.
Okay, and one more question, Tracy. So just to verify, if someone was on a leave of absence and is now applying for SPSL, payroll will have to go back and make the adjustments, correct?
Correct, yes. And the other question above that, I think, is will payroll, something about training?
Yeah, here, let's see, we got a couple other. Let's see here. Well, now they're coming fast and furious. So, sorry. Will payroll receive training instructions through the auditor controller on the new codes process?
I will ask them. I'm not sure. Hopefully. I'll check with them to see what their plans are on how to do all the adjustments.
So Rachel has a good question about magical tracking of SPSL. And it is magical, Rachel. I'm glad you've noted that. is the magical tracking of SPSL hours going to include NDA hours that have been used from 1/1/21 up to this point? Say they used 40 hours in February. Would that be reflected in the hours, even if they aren't asking for SPSL hours at this time?
Yes, that is a good question. So yes, what we're going to do is when we put this bank in the system, we are going to run a query and identify any natural disaster hours that were paid from January 1st to current. Those will be deducted from their SPSL entitlement. So the real hours that are available to the employee, both natural disaster and SPL, since it's kind of one bank now, will be in that SPSL bank.
Then and one more question. For a retro adjustment where staff exhausted their end-ish time and had to use sick time, who will actually process the adjustment to credit their bank? Let's do that one first. Why don't we do that? And then we can come back to part two. So who will actually process the adjustment to credit their bank?
So the agency payroll people will be doing, they're the ones that normally do the adjustments. So I would think that's who's going to do that.
And when the SPSL form is submitted, is the auditor's office that makes, when the SPSL form is submitted, is that the auditor's office that makes the adjustment or department payroll?
No, so the process would be the employee submits it to their supervisor signs off on it, and then it goes to the agency HR leave of absence reps to make sure, they do all their checks, whether like the employee's eligible, were they on leave, what types of pay did they receive, and they will work with their agency or department payroll to get the adjustments done.
Okay. I think that's all our questions for the moment.
Alrighty, so let's see, for retro requests. We already went through that. Okay, number 9. If an employee indicates they used vacation or float for SPSL reason, even though they had sick hours, we just adjust back the vacation hours. Yes, and so it's the same answer as number 8. You also need to subtract the hours from the SPSL bank once it's in the system. Okay, I'll go on to the next one and then maybe we can address that next. Is the SPSL available to extra help and intermittent employees? Is it available for management employees? Yes, it applies to all county employees, regardless of class, bargaining unit, etc.
Okay, and going back, I'm going to say really quickly, we had a comment here. Sorry, and I from Alicia was saying that adjustments have been made due to payroll processing quicker than they can sometimes get the NDP form signed. When auditor controller runs that query for the natural disaster pay, it may not show the accurate number. Is there a process to catch this discrepancy between the quick change versus the coding?
So the only way that we know internally what's been used is what's in the system. So if it's not in there, the query that I build won't catch it. So I'm not sure how, I mean, I guess if you know that something's not in the system and you want it subtracted from the bank, you would probably need to do an adjustment to pull it yourself. Because when we put it in the system, to your point, we are just going to run the query, identify how many hours the employee has left, and that's going to be their starting balance for SPSL. If it is not correct, then you would do what you normally would do to subtract hours from maybe a sick or a vacation, you know, a regular sick or vacation bank.
So one more. So from Anthony Loria's group, they have a separate payroll department. Are they to use the payroll instruction forms to request the employee's SPSL benefit or any other change or any other changes?
I don't know. I guess so. I mean, I guess that contains all forms of pay, right? The types of pay that the employee wants to use. Sure. I mean, I guess it should be noted on there. I hadn't thought about that, but it sounds good. Anybody else have a comment on that?
Yeah, we could use it. I would say definitely getting the form that we have because of that attestation that they're, if we're retroing, they are indeed agreeing that it is COVID related. So the payroll is good to kind of start the process, but definitely get that the form in file for that person's retro, I would think.
I took it as like in addition to. So once we get the request for the hours, yes, if they're on leave, I would add it to the payroll instruction form. Right, Catherine, is that what you were?
Yeah, I think so. Maybe if we're not understanding your question quite right, Anthony, either feel free to shout out to the group or put back in the chat. But I think, right, to Jess's point, is that the attestation form that Tracy's given you all the link to, that form does require the employee to, you know, attest that what they're telling you about this retro period is correct and true. And that's obviously important to us also to have a copy of that information before we make these adjustments, because if there's a dispute about this at a later time, you know, we want to have them attesting that, yes, this really does fall under the qualifiers for SPSL. Tracy, does this include extra help?
Yes. So it applies to all employees, regardless of class or bargaining unit. Extra help, intermittent, yes.
Sorry, one more. Childcare due to school closures for COVID-19 on the premises. Does this mean school and daycare closures due to the pandemic, but not due to COVID-19 on the premises is not qualifying? So I think if I'm understanding the question right, it's if your specific school closes because your school has an outbreak at that specific location as opposed to a global closure. Am I understanding that right?
Yep, that's my question.
And I think this is where we get back to our DAM meeting disclosure, is that the words that we have are the same words that we've given you today, which are those are the words of here's what the qualifiers are. So are they clear? Is there ambiguity? Are there gray areas? Absolutely. And that's why we're continuing to work with counsel. We're continuing to seek guidance. But the best that we can tell you is that's the reason Tracy cut and paste the words exactly as they read, is I think we just have to look at what do those words say and what did the employee write on their form, and does it appear those two series of words align? And, you know, I know those are dissatisfying answers for everyone, but that's really the reality of where we are, is that, you know, none of us are the authors of the legislation. And quite frankly, people who author legislation often don't understand the working implications of what it means for all of you to do your jobs and do them each day. So we're struggling through it over time. What tends to happen in this is somebody litigates or puts something forward and we get some clarification. But for the moment, I would just say the most important part about this document, I think that we will both post on the intranet and email back out to you later in the week, is try always to go back to just what are the written words. If you can rely back on those, that's sort of your safe space. This is what was written. This is what is said. I'm not using any of my own generalized interpretation, I'm really using the words. So that was a very long non-answer, but hopefully it helps. Do employees have visibility to their SPSL banks?
So they don't yet, but they will. So that's what I was talking about. We're configuring the system. It should be in by next pay period. We're just not sure when. But yes, they will see it as a separate bank, just like they can currently go in and see sick, vacation, holiday, PTO, et cetera.
And it looks like Anthony provided some clarification that he was really asking, what is the process for them to, what paperwork should they be submitting for retro changes to payroll? So I think that was the exact question.
Gotcha. So however current retro changes are requested when somebody's on leave, if a payroll instruction form, revised payroll instruction form is currently submitted for retro changes, I would say do the same with this. I don't see any reason to change. It's just a form of pay, this new sick leave. It's just a new bank of hours to use.
Okay, so next, will you, Tracy, be running a query for COVID hours utilized for staff who exhausted all sick bank hours and had to quarantine at home during a close contact at work with someone who was COVID positive? Are there any special steps to account for staff who use this time code? So those individuals should still have, this is where, of course, sorry, Tracy, I'm just jumping in on taking a steering your thunder there, just want to make the point that this, just as FFCRA existed in communion or unison with the Cal OSHA COVID emergency guidelines, the Cal OSHA COVID emergency guidelines still exist today and are still, we still have to abide by those things, and we're sending folks home from the work site for a work site exposure. Those processes and how we are coding that is unchanged. The exposures that we're talking about under SPSL are similar to what they were under FFCRA, which is that those are not exposures that are exposures that are specific to the work site. So hopefully that helps.
Thank you, Catherine.
Did you want to, I don't know if there's anything else to say on that.
I don't think I have a comment on it, just that we're only querying natural disaster hours and supplemental paid sick leave since those two are running concurrent.
So here's another one. Will CEO HR need the SPSL form for the employee's file, just like we've been providing the NDP form, or is it not necessary?
You know, that's a good question. I'll have to ask Kelly Akers. You know, she's the one that would know whether it needs to be in the employee's file or not. So I will take that away and we'll definitely report back to you all.
Okay. So then someone else wants to know about extra hours for extra help and students. And I think we have a specific coming up on that. True, Tracy?
True. Yes. So yeah, we'll get to that soon.
And can we get a specific clarification on the term quote unquote distance learning? Because employees are going to want to use this SPSL to be home doing distance learning, even though the way it's worded, it doesn't seem like it. Am I understanding from what you're saying, distance learning would not be covered, at least until we get clarification?
I'm not sure if, is that in the language? It doesn't look familiar to me. I didn't know the law specifically talked about distance learning.
Right. I think what they're asking is that what the wording is school closure, and is so you know, in that within the world of distance learning, some people have chosen not to return their children because they would prefer not to. And some people's children are only going very brief periods of time or maybe only certain days because the schools are only allowing for that. We're truly back to, and again, we're continuing to work on those pieces, but there's nothing, I mean, really what it says is it's a school closure. And currently You know, we would have to look again case by case. You know, Becky raises a fair point. It was the school closed because that school had an outbreak and everyone was told no one can be here. You must go home for 2 weeks. That's one version of things. There was a different version when we all started this pandemic where no schools were open and those were truly school closures. And now we're at a place where, you know, the term school closure is somewhat undefined, but I think there are people who would argue that distance learning is not the equivalent of a school closure. It might be an abbreviated form of school, but it is not necessarily a closure. And again, that's where we're looking to the words. And, you know, and I think somebody just said, yeah, it could be a partial closure due to capacity limits. And I think, yes, those are all fair questions. And it's the old HR adage, every case on its own facts. Unfortunately, it's just not, there's not a simple yes, no for every one of these. So you're gonna, I mean, if you have individuals who are telling you I qualify because of school closure, you're gonna need to ask a few more questions to understand what it is that they think is the fact pattern that qualifies them for SPSL. And I think we're back to, there's a lot of different versions, clearly, of parents on this call, and I feel your pain, who have the angst of distance learning in your lives. I feel you, I hear you, and I get it. So there's lots of different variants depending on how old your kids are, which schools they go to, and the circumstances. And again, I think great examples, all of them, but I think everyone's gonna have to really get fact specific with what the employee thinks. How is the employee defining it as a school closure? And then it's case by case. And as always, we understand these become complicated and we're here to try to help you through those ones that are a bit more complex.
Thank you, Catherine. All right, so the next two questions is kind of what we were talking about earlier. So some employees, the question 11, some employees have claimed and in some cases received 4850 benefits and or disability leave and payments. Will those payments need to be paid back only to pay SPSL? So we, and Catherine, you may be able to speak to this, but we're still, I mean, obviously this needs to be run by legal counsel, right, Catherine?
Yes, so we are still doing some research. What I can tell you is where the research applies is on the retro issue. So where mm-hmm. the research is clear is today going forward, meaning if you have an employee who has a COVID-19 work comp claim and they lost time from work, either 4850 time they would be entitled to or temporary total disability, and they have not yet been paid those benefits, from today forward, the first thing they will have to exhaust, as they did back in the good old days of 2020, is they have to exhaust all of their COVID sick leave, which would be, in this case, any, if they have natural disaster pay still available, and if they don't, it's the SPSL. Where we are having some discussion is on the retro issue. There's, because our workers' compensation program as a county is wholly self-insured, we are technically entitled to a credit to ourselves, because we may have paid monies for 4850 or other things at different rates, where the rate we should have been paying was at now the SPSL rate. We would have always had them use the natural disaster pay, but let's just assume you have an employee who got COVID positive for work comp after 1/1/21. Where we have the issue is we would have potential entitlement to credit for any temporary disability paid or 4850 paid, where we would have used the SPSL had we known it existed in January or February or all of March. So first of all, to get us back to all thinking clearly, is that the legal guidance we're getting is just as a reminder on the retros. Even in industrial cases, at the moment at least, the employee has to tell you, I got paid something different and I want SPSL. So that's the start, whether it's industrial or not. On those cases, you're going to need to work directly with our claims administrator at Sedgwick, and risk management will support that. Both Julie Ann Miller and Dorothy Davis are here with us today. They are listening in and helping on the industrial piece. But those will be kind of how we look at those. In time, there may be a broader, more global discussion about the ability to take different credit. But for right now, just understand anyone who is entitled to temporary total disability or 4850 from January 1st forward who has not already been paid will be required to exhaust their SBSL before they get their work comp benefits. The retros, if they ask you for the SBSL related to the retro, you need to let your work comp adjuster at Sedgwick know, and you need to work with risk management, and we're going to try to get through those case by case in the short term.
Thank you. I have just a quick question on that. So can Sedgwick go back and initiate repayment on a 4850 claim that they've already paid, or only an employee can do that?
Only an employee can do that, not Sedgwick.
Okay. All right. I'm not worried about that happening.
I'm not really either for people who received 4850. For people who are not sworn officers, I think there's a good chance that that will happen.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So question 12 is similar in that it is referencing a retro. So an employee is TTD, unpaid, and is requesting 80 hours of SPSL. Employee has been on a leave for more than a year. What do we do? So similar answer, correct, Catherine? It would be it would be similar, right, to what you just said.
Yes. So again, same thing is, they're entitled on the retro to the SPSL for whatever reason. And then, you know, but again, it only is January 1, you know, coming forward. So they have to A, request it, B, tell you that they meet one of the qualifying criteria. If they do, they're entitled to 80 hours of SPSL.
All right. Question 13, does the employee have to provide supporting documentation? I won't read through this whole answer since it's lengthy. I did take the answer directly from the DIR website, the frequently asked question website, which I left the link here. This has answers to many of the questions that we're talking about today. So I encourage you to go to this if you have other questions that pop up. But basically the answer is no, we can't ask for certification unless we suspect that there's some kind of false information being given to us, is basically what the paragraph says. Their example says the employee asked for SPSL, but then we learn that the employee was out at a park on the same day. That's their example. Then they're saying we could reasonably request documentation. Go ahead, Catherine.
I was just going to say, from the risk management side, I would just only offer to you that it really needs to be more than just a generalized suspicion. And that, again, we're asking people to, Anthony used the word shenanigans, that's a great, good word too, is that people must sign the attestation form. And if something later comes to light, well, then you all know there's an avenue outside of this that would be the right place for that. But even in the DIR example, what I would just make is, they didn't suspect the person was at the park. They somehow, after the fact, somebody comes to them with something really substantive that leads them to believe that the employee was dishonest. So on the front end, if an employee tells you they feel they qualify, I would just tell you from the risk management perspective, there's very little. If you know something today, it should be concrete, and we're not encouraging that people are going out and starting their own investigative firms. If the employee tells you it's so, there's very little you can ask for, and it's a fairly automatic approval.
Thank you. And so the same answer is going to apply to these next three questions. We had a question about an employee had no reaction within the first few days of receiving their vaccine. What do we do if an employee comes back saying they did have a reaction? Is there a reasonable time limit to justify the usage? And then it says they had some supervisors that have employees saying they are having a reaction now that these hours are available. Same guidance, look back, and we really shouldn't be asking for documentation. If this is what the employee is stating and they've signed the form that has the attestation statement, go ahead and approve the hours. 15, the information sent out indicated that a covered employee is eligible to take SPSL if they are experiencing COVID-19 symptoms and seeking medical treatment. Does this mean that they have to have seen a doctor, take a COVID test? How do we verify? Nope, just see the answer to number 13. Can we ask for confirmation that they attended a vaccine appointment? No, see answer 13 answer. 17, an employee requested vacation for the day after her shots in anticipation of not feeling well. Okay, and now she's asking for a vacation leave bank adjustment. Would this qualify? Yes, if the employee is now stating that she meets one of the eligibility criteria for SPSL for the day she took off, yep, go ahead and do the retro adjustments. I like Phil's comments. So polygraph tests are out. Yeah, let's not put them on a polygraph. That's why I love this group. We have humor that we can interject that makes it a little palatable, more palatable. Okay, so number 18, same employee used vacation rather than sick leave due to not having sufficient sick banks. Does this program only replace sick leave? Nope, it's any hours used, vacation, annual leave, whatever they've used, we've got to replace it with SPSL if the employee asks. And finally, well, I think this is finally, are part-time employees eligible for the full 80 hours? The easy answer is no. I mean, that is the answer, but then we put on here how it's calculated, which is horrendous when you read through it. It's going to be very difficult for us to identify. So what we're going to have to do when we put these banks in the system, as you can see, is work through this calculation for every part-time employee we have. So if anybody can bake good cookies, we will gladly take them. we will need them when we're doing these calculations to get these numbers in the bank. But anyway, in your spare time, you may want to read through how we determine how many hours part-time employees get. But they are entitled to hours, but not the full 80 is the answer. And at the very end, I just left again the link to the Department of Industrial Relations, their frequently asked questions website that you can access at any time.
So one more question before we release you from this, Tracy, which is for time taken so far this calendar year, should we be sending the SPSL form to employees in a proactive gesture, or do we wait for them to advise us they want it and then provide? So again, the form is, I mean, the law is really, really clear. The employee has to ask you for it. So that's the way it's written. And so, you know, my recommendation would be in all of these things, follow the law exactly as it's written to avoid just overcomplicating the circumstance.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So I suppose it was a category of wishful thinking by your DAM meeting coordinators, and that we thought today's meeting might even be in and out in 30 minutes. But but again, you know, what's time in COVID world? So I recognize we're way over time already. We do want to offer you some feedback as it relates to VCHRP and Presagia. I'm confident they will go through this, you know, as they'll get through it as quickly as they can, but want to just remind everyone, if you need to leave, it's all going to be available for you. And we will do this again in a week at our usual 10 a.m. slot, and people can ask questions again, and we can go through all of the materials sort of especially the VCHRB presage of parts again. So do not panic. We are here. We will get through this part as best as we can, and then we will do this again in just a few days. So I'm going to turn it over to Ken and Courtney, and they're going to take us through the VCHRP portion.
Perfect. Thank you, Catherine. All right. So as far as VCHRP entries under the SPSL effective the 1/1/21, we are going to require entries for all employees for tracking purposes that absences have occur more than 3 days. So that is including the extra help, the interim and employees as well that fall under this category. We do have the PLA ORG sequence 0 only for any kind of leave that falls under this that does not have supporting documents. So as we mentioned, if they sent the request and they do not provide supporting documents, we can still approve the leave and it would fall under this category. And then if they do submit requests with supporting documents, then we will still indicate the PLA ORG sequence 0 and we'll follow up with the sequence 1 with the applicable code, whether it be PLA HEA for self under FMLA, PLA MED sequence 1 for self ADA, or PLA FMC sequence 1 for family care. Now, if any retro corrections are needed for entry by us here in CEO Benefits, then we do request that you send the PAFs over to our loa.benefits@ventura.org email. And if you can just follow the regular instructions as the employee ID, the employee first initial last name, and also include SPSL in the subject line, that would indicate for us to make the entry. And we'll go ahead and do that for you. And we do have, as of right now, we do have a note in there that says caring for a child whose school or place of care is closed due to COVID-19 will fall under the PLA ORG sequence 0 only with supporting documents. So as of now, if the school is closed, then we will require supporting documents, but we will only leave it at the PLA ORG sequence 0 level. We won't have a follow-up. So if there's any other questions that came in.
Looks like we have one. Just want to confirm the action and reason code for those that are quarantining due to exposure to a positive family member is PLA ORG 0 or PLA PER 1. So meaning, so no health certificate.
So no health certificate would be the PLA ORG sequence 0 only.
Okay, and if anybody has other questions as it relates to VCHRP, feel free to throw those into the chat and we'll try to get to them in the next couple of minutes. But for just keeping it moving, I'll turn it over to Jess now so he can talk about the presagia implications.
Hello, so presagia has been updated. So now you will find a new leave category that'll be confirmed in the eligibility and entitlement. So for those leave that qualify under the supplemental paid sick leave, you will now be able to add the policy in the dropdown. Because of the fact that we do have that kind of a certification, no certification required, when you add the policy and it asks you to confirm the documentation or certification, you could use the attestation or the form requesting the actual leave as your proof of moving forward and approving accordingly. So in presagia, it kind of goes through the normal process. Once we click that it is COVID related, you could now add the policy. On a related, unrelated note, the meeting that we had last meeting, we confirmed that the automatic eligibility would now be going forward. So effective Monday, you will start seeing that new prompt window that if an employee is eligible, instead of going through the confirm eligibility and entitlement process as a wizard, it'll prompt you when the case begins. So hopefully that'll take a little bit out of your work kind of flow and it'll make processing these cases a little bit easier.
Great, thank you, Jess. So if people have questions about that as you start to see it next week, I will say that Jess has also been splitting his time doing some DSW work, but he is available early in next week. So if you have questions on those pieces, he should be able to assist you there also. So, okay. So again, I know it's a lot of information. It's a lot to take in. We do understand and appreciate all that. We're doing our very, very best to try to sort through this in real time as it comes to us. And as I said, get you correct, accurate, real-time answers. It's just, as you all know, it's very fluid and ever-changing. So I would anticipate, you know, that today is a good starting place, I think. You're going to start to get some real world facts that are going to probably elicit more questions, and we'll have to talk those through and do this again. But understanding that we at least will be doing this again in a week hopefully gives people reassurance that you can start to have the conversations with those who've already reached out to you about the SPSL. And if you run into a snag, next week's going to hopefully be another good opportunity at resource. So couple real quick questions before we go. How do we do when the case is closed in Presagia and the employees have requested to use SPSL retroactively?
Please send me an email with the information. Most importantly, it's going to be the employee's ID number so I could look it up in Presagia, and the time frame. Just confirm the time frame, and if you have that form. I will definitely be available to help you out, especially on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. So if you do have a retro and you want to include it in the Presagia, please let me know and I could assist you on those.
Great. And then somebody said, I may have missed the answer of this, but how should employees code their time in VCHRP until we receive the SPSL codes?
That's a good question. I would suggest that you would use the natural disaster code since we're going to be querying for that. And then we'll be counting those hours toward their SPSL. So yes, please use the natural disaster codes, the NDIS and the NDISH codes.
Okay, and one last one, is VCHRP new leave codes available on the website?
The codes are not necessarily new, but for you, Teresa, I can go ahead and send you over the form that we do use with all the current codes. These ones are not necessarily new.
Great. And there was a question about getting the materials we shared with you today. So we do hope to have all of these posted towards the end of the week, but certainly we also are hoping to send out to the usual distribution list for all of you who attend these meetings, the attachments as well. We are literally learning things in real time. So at 2 o'clock today, we agreed that there's a couple things that, bless you. There's a couple things that need to be changed. So just little tweaks. So we're going to make those tweaks and then we will send them out. But certainly everyone should have their own little email version. And then, between now and some point on Friday, and then we will post them onto the site as quickly as we can. We'll, as soon as we're able to email them to you, we'll also ask that they be placed on the site. And it's just how quickly, we're able to get support and actually getting them posted, but should just be a couple days there. And then one last one, are the new codes going to be an option for this current pay period payroll processing? Rachel says no pressure. Thank you, Rachel, for all of the window of time. So, Tracy, did you want to comment on that part or no?
Sorry, I thought it was just a comment. Are the new codes going to be an option for this current paper? Yeah, the NDIS and NDISH have been in the system since last year, so those are available, but the other codes will not be in the system until we actually have the banks ready to rock and roll.
So hopefully that helps. And as we said, we're here to answer, specific questions. We anticipate that unfortunately the next few days will probably be a bit of a push because anybody who's come to you now, we need to deal with them on the front end. So we recognize it will be a stressful time for all of you, keeping in mind that we too will do our very best to support each of you. Tracy did a fantastic job of taking the actual language that is the language we would read and rely upon as it relates to each of these questions. So our only ask is just because, you know, to Rachel's point, the time is upon us here. And again, we don't control any of these pieces. Is just, we would ask that before you come and say, hey, I have a question, if everyone can just try to read the same language we're reading, then we're all working off the same words. It makes the conversations a lot more meaningful for everyone. So hopefully having the actual words in front of you on the documents from Tracy will help, as well as the, you know, the link to the DIR. And then if you still feel stuck, we're certainly happy to talk it through with you. And, you know, we'll all look at the words and try to interpret them as best as we can within those more difficult and complex questions. So I apologize for that. This was a lot longer than we thought it would be, but I hope it was at least helpful and answered people's questions to at least get the process started. We will see you all next Wednesday, 10 a.m. will be the next one. And hopefully at that point, we will keep this the focus and the topic. And if you do have specific questions before next Wednesday that you want to put forward to us, it's helpful because then we can share your questions with the group and already have the answers prepared. So as you run into things in the course of the next few days, please do ask us your questions to say, hey, can you please answer this at the next DAM meeting? That is very, I think it's good for the whole group. So appreciate that. Oh, is it at 9 a.m.? Sorry, yeah, I said 10 a.m. and we had to move it to 9 a.m. So see, things won't stop changing. So yes, that is correct. It's next Wednesday at 9 a.m. So sorry, thank you, whoever caught that. So anyway, I hope everyone enjoys your afternoon, and we will talk again in a week.